Burnout is without a doubt one of the biggest things driving athletes and coaches out of sports. The solution isn't simple. There's no one-size-fits-all approach. The problem is very complex. In today's episode, we continue our conversation with Chris Pinkeroli, author of Sport, A Stage for Life, How to Connect with the Touchstones of Elite Performance and Fulfillment. And we also brought her daughter, Alyssa, in, who plays water polo at Stanford, for her perspective. Now, in today's episode, we're going to talk about how athletes, coaches, and parents can all work together to support the athlete experience so they can not only reach their full potential as an athlete, but experience more fulfillment in their sport. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm your host, JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. The mission of this podcast is to help you become a better leader and build a better culture. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which provides one-on-one coaching and consulting for leaders. Learn more about us at tocculture.com. This episode is brought to you by the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, our newsletter includes two things you don't want to miss out on. Firstly, the notes to that week's podcast episode. Whether you're listening while driving the car, out for a run, or doing the dishes, we don't want you to miss the biggest takeaways from each episode. Secondly, each newsletter is a short article from myself or Nate on leadership and culture. These articles are designed to inspire, encourage, and provide practical insights into leadership and culture building. Our content is a perfect fit for anyone who wants to stay up to date with the latest trends and insights in culture building. You can subscribe to the newsletter at tocculture.com or by clicking on the link in the details of each episode. You know, you talk about in the book Anti-Fragility and just around how going through hard things, difficult things, you know, for athletes, I mean, that's part of the growth experience that sports offer us, right? It is difficult. It is stressful. There are all these pressures. How, as a parent, did you navigate that with your daughter and all your children, really? How have you approached being that support but not saving them from the struggle?
I think the most important thing, JP, is to really look at them. Look at them, what they are going through. To really, you know, those things, to really listen. I remember you sharing with your wife that sometimes when she starts telling you some things, you want to jump into the action. She says, no, I just want you to listen. And for you, used to be a huge exercise. I don't know nowadays. So the same thing in parenting. Sometimes you feel you have all the answers. And especially being an athlete, I've been there. I know how it is. But they need to go through that. But we need to be alert, observing, and seeing when it's being too much. You need to step and talk more, give more light to the matter, to share, going there in our case. Or it should be okay. This too shall pass. So I think the biggest challenge as a parent is to really observe what they are telling you, to really listen.
Alyssa, I want to come back to what you mentioned before just about your team context there at Stanford, because you and your teammates are all in some way or another kind of going through and trying to navigate both the transition to college and then, you know, again, just the pressures, right, of trying to earn a spot and compete for a national title. You mentioned your coach. I wonder, you know, most of our audience here are coaches that are listening to this podcast. And as an athlete in that environment, you know, what have you seen? What are some of the best practices or best things that your coach has done, either for you personally or for your team, just to offer some of that support? And then are there things that your teammates have done for each other that have also really helped you to be able to kind of navigate through that?
Yeah, I think something that we focused on working together is dividing the team into groups. So we assigned people in my team to focus on different pillars, like mental health aspect, nourishing aspect, academic, different topics. And I was part of the mental health team. And so we met up with my coach and he told us, he was like, okay, we have to make sure we the girls are able to come to practice, be like 100% of themselves. But I would like to know what is going on with them that day. I want to know if there's something that, let's say, they did bad on a test, to make sure I understand why they're not giving 100% of themselves to practice. So what he did, he started a survey that we had to complete. It wasn't mandatory. It was something that you could do if you wanted to. But every day before practice, he would send out a survey, and that would answer like 5 questions. It was like, how was the quality of your sleep? From 1 to 10, how do you feel right now? And is there anything else I need to know about what's going on in your day? And you didn't have to do it, but that simple thing, I feel like, definitely was a first step on pushing us on the right direction to know why we're not giving it 100% at practice.
I actually love that example you just gave there, Alyssa. You know, it's something we've had a few coaches do, and it's a really simple, like, activity or thing that coaches can do is just send out that Google Form link, and it's optional, but players are able to communicate to the coach. I would imagine that for you, that it also actually helped you to think about how you're doing. You know, like oftentimes I think we just walk into the next thing and we don't ever take stock of how's our day going? How are we feeling? Did we sleep well? We're just constantly rushing from one thing to the next. I'm just kind of curious from your perspective, you know, if that resonates.
Yeah, it definitely helped me think a little bit because, yeah, at Stanford, for example, we don't stop. We go from class to train to doing homework to sleep and repeat again the next day. So it gives me a moment to like reflect and really feel like what I'm thinking and how my body is at the moment. And I think that's something super important as a high performance athlete is like knowing your body and like knowing what else you need to do for yourself that day, especially if it's a day that you're not doing so well. You woke up and you're tired. You have to get to know your body and see like how you're reacting differently so you can change your mindset about that.
I kind of want to pivot our conversation here to a little bit more of your experience, Chris, and maybe Alyssa can weigh in at some points. But just Chris, you know, one big thing that people talk a lot about that is so critical to a culture. Obviously, the coaching is really important, but the player leadership is really, really important. And I have no doubt, you know, you've been captain of a lot of teams, and you've been a real leader on the teams, and obviously in the organizations that you've worked in as an executive. And so, I'm just kind of curious, you know, just overall, like, you know, you know, what was your approach as a leader, and then who have been some of the best leaders you've been around, and you know, what helped them or what type of qualities did they really display?
I think vulnerability is a very important one. And not the leaders put themselves in a pedestal of places far away. They earn to be there. They try to be part of the team. They get their hands dirty as well. I remember as a captain of women's water polo, it was something that intrigued me when I saw when the players, we heard the national anthems. So some players would feel very energized and ready to go into the water and start that game ready to kill, you know, with all the energy. Some players, they were ready for the game, would hear the national anthem and would go to a different route, would be overwhelming, feel too strong. So it was, okay, the same fact, different response in the team. So this was something, being a captain, I remember, I looked for a sports psychologist in Brazil, saying, what can I do? How can I control this, not to lose a few players to start the game in their best way? So he suggested creating every day, whenever we were traveling, doing something together, every day we would meet for 1 hour, only the players, with no coaches, no one, just among ourselves, and trying to everyone to share. And when one is speaking, the basic rules, don't interrupt, let them talk until the end, bring situations of the game. So these type of things helped me to get to know them completely different than I knew at that time. So it helped me to see how to best address the communication that the coaches were telling on the bench. And when I was as a captain over there in the field, how I could talk to each of them to tailor much more the communication. And this type of experience of skills I took to the corporate environment. So you don't need to know everything in an area. For instance, the operational aspect in HR is something that wasn't my thing. I love the employee experience to study that at Jane Haynes, but not the operational aspect. But how you can bring different people, different knowledge, this diversity of the team, and how you can create the best team to perform towards the goals that we need. So this type of listening to create a moment that we can share experience, and it starts from with the leader being vulnerable and accept that he doesn't know it all, that there will be days that I wasn't ready to shoot, to be at my best, and I needed them to step in. So how you can share these moments with your team players.
Well, Chris, I'm curious about, you know, your playing experience. As JP mentioned, you've been the captain of numerous teams over the course of your career. And I guess this question has two parts. Number one, what was it like for you to first start to discover that leadership voice, recognizing what your team needs and sort of learning how to share whatever that message is in a way that it can be received? And are there things that coaches can do to help players that are growing into a leadership role to support them or to encourage them or to empower them to be able to walk successfully as a team leader, as a team captain?
Nate, I've always been very passionate about the things that I'm working with. So I started noticing my voice, the power of my voice, when I used to do a speech with the team talking about our dream in water polo, our dream towards the Olympic Games, our dream towards qualifying for the first time for Pan American Games. So these things, I really saw that I spoke from my heart and really connected with people. So it was interesting that nowadays when we study, we say that whenever we have a super ordinary goals, those goals that they are genuine, something genuinely, something important, not for me, but for the whole team, that they are those goals that I cannot reach them by myself. I need Alisa, I need all the team working together towards it. And they are those goals that need to tap into different strengths. So this I started doing intuitively at first as a captain, and then working at the organizational level, I saw the importance of those goals that many times we receive from our managers, from the company, but how you need to translate these goals. So every individual can really connect with that. They can see how their strengths can make a difference towards that goal. It's not something that doesn't speak with me if I work towards that. So this work was very important to be done, how you cascade the goals and to bring into the individual level so the person can connect towards the vision that the company or the sport team is looking for.
Okay, so Chris, we've got a couple questions just kind of wrap up here on some things that I thought were really good from your book. And I think they apply not just for athletes, but they also apply for coaches. You know, there's actually, you know, when it comes to performance, you know, the coach is a performer as well too. And one thing that really resonated with me was you talked about getting on the balcony versus being on the dance floor, you know, kind of zooming in and zooming out. I was wondering if you could just kind of talk about, you know, what's the difference between the balcony and the dance floor and, you know, how we as leaders might utilize that and also even our athletes be able to utilize that concept?
As an athlete, we learn a lot to be in the present moment. For instance, whenever you're going to play soccer, you cannot be over there in the field thinking about what's going to be my homework tonight, what I'm going to eat. what time I'm going home. You need to be focused in the present moment, in doing the right reading, almost when are they going to pass the ball, or you can make a steal, when you can go into a counterattack. So you start becoming better and better on the dance floor to read and to do the right timing of the actions in the game, to anticipate the movements and to be at our best. But at the same time, we need to develop, and this takes maturity, to look from the balcony. It's from the balcony you are watching the dance floor. It's when you have to have a more strategic view. So sometimes deciding, am I in the right team? When I'm going to move to university, which university should I go to, East or West Coast? How I'm going to prepare myself strategically for the next game? And in life, whenever we become stronger as an athlete, as a leader, as a coach, you can switch these both views in the same game situation. Sometimes you need to see strategically when it's time to change someone, to do a major tactical change. And when you also need to be at the present moment, seeing what's going to happen on those seconds to make the right decision there to call for the team. So these are type of exercise, how you do it constantly, how you go and prepare your mind. I like very much one book that inspired me when I wrote mine as well, is The Inner Side of Tennis, Timothy Galway. He says that there are two types of minds that we always go through. One is the analytical mind. So they observe, am I holding the right way the racket? How many times do I need to bounce the ball before I serve? How high is going to be my serve? So the analytical mind is talking with you all the time. But then there is the mind that you are just being. You are there. It's when you are in the flow state. It's the meditation in action. You're not analyzing anything. You're just being there. So it's when you are really feeling, it's almost when you play basketball, you can almost attract the ball towards your hands. And you can see the perfect shot before you do it. And you can never be full-time at the flow state, this just being state. You constantly alter in these both minds, but how you can exercise and prepare yourself to be more time into the flow state.
Yeah. And what I love about that, you know, and I think it really applies to us as coaches. I think a lot of times even coaches or leaders spend a lot of time on the dance floor. They're really caught up in the action and stuff, and they don't ever get on the balcony and fully, you know, take in the whole complexity of the situation, you know. And we've talked a lot about very complex issues today with like athlete burnout, pushing them, challenging them, you know, working with parents. And it's a very complex situation. And we as leaders too got to be able to, you know, be in the moment, coaching our team, you know, very focused. But there's also moments where we got to step back and look at the bigger picture, the athlete's well-being, partnerships with parents, holding different perspectives, you know, be able to empathize with those individuals.
And JP, I think there is an opportunity here. When I wrote my book, one thing that I got inspired is to create a methodology to simplify this journey that we have in high performance from different roles, being a parent, being a coach, being an athlete. And the first dimension of this methodology, I talk about a foundation, the importance of a network of support. So even the coaches need a network of support, who they are going to choose to help them to shift from what you said, from the dance floor to the balcony view, to help to debate, talk about things, can be vulnerable, can discuss. So we all need a network of support. We all need the practice. No matter how talented you are, how you need practicing, you can learn that. And how you need, I call the healthy lifestyle. And even the coaches, how important it is to take care of themselves. When we see in the medical healthcare industry, how many times the doctors and people who take care of others are the ones who are having most the burnout, how they need to take care of themselves to enable them to be at their best with the patients. So how the coaches need to take care of themselves to enable them to be at their best with the team.
You know, one thing that probably is a trigger for me is when people say, I just want my kids to be happy, or I just want them to be happy, as if that's the only goal and the most important and the ultimate goal that we should be pursuing at all costs. And, you know, I imagine you know a lot more about happiness since you kind of have a master's degree in happiness here or certification in it, you know, but, you know, when you think about meaning and purpose, I mean, shouldn't that be something that we drive for our kids, for our athletes, be pursuing rather than just them being happy? Or maybe tell me I'm wrong on that.
JP, looking for a life that you can be happier has always been the search for humanity. When you look in philosophy, the ancient Greeks, Confucius in the Eastern philosophy, they always are looking for what leads to a happier, to a good life. But one thing we need to be clear, happiness doesn't exist to have a life always a happy one. This is a matter of expectations. You cannot expect when you start doing meditation that you're not going to be angry anymore. There will be times you're still going to be angry, but you know how to deal more with that. The same thing with happiness. We say happiness is like looking at the sunlight. Sometimes it hurts your eyes, are too strong. But when you look at this color of the color of the sun through a rainbow, you can understand much better how to work on that. And you can be much more protagonist in your life. So we know in the science of happiness that it's important to have a spiritual life. And a spiritual life is not a matter of religion, even though religion is very positive. But when we say spiritual, it's much more related to a sense of purpose, being the present moment, right here, now, working your on your strengths. The second aspect is the importance of the physical aspect of the exercise, that when you don't do exercise, it's like taking an antidepressant, a depressant one. It's very strong that. The importance of sleep, the eating, the recovery moments, the importance of touch. The third aspect we study in the science of happiness is the intellectual aspect, that it's our need as human beings that we want to go deep and study something new. As we are studying now, we talked about high performance, about culture, about burnout. We want to learn more about that. The fourth aspect is the relational one, that our relations are the biggest contributor to happiness. And it's not a matter of quantity, it's the quality of our relations. So that's why there was the Gallup research. You should do a question at work environment saying, do you have a best friend at work? And many leaders said, take it out, this question. It's not important. Work is not a place to have best friends. But this question had a huge correlation to satisfaction. So when you have an environment that you can trust someone. And finally, the emotional aspect. We studied together about that. The importance of giving yourself permission to be human, even an athlete, that many times he always needs to show that he's at his best. The importance how you acknowledge your emotions, they cannot translate into actions sometimes. I remember an athlete asked me, have you ever felt so angry that you feel like breaking everything around you? I said, yes, I felt like this, but this doesn't justify you breaking everything around you. So how you can acknowledge your emotions and learning how to understand the triggers, not to explode in terms of actions. So these are things we study in the science of happiness. That is an inner work that you do from inside out to make you having more wellness in your life to become stronger in realizing your full potential.
What I love about that and I love about your book is that good parenting, good coaching is not just giving our kids what they want in that moment that we think is going to make them feel happy. It's way more complex, as you just kind of illustrated so beautifully there. People really need to read your book. You know, parents, I can't recommend enough. I would say it's the most comprehensive book for sports parents today, as far as it covering all the different elements of what we can do. It also has great value for coaches as well. Outside of your book, Chris, what are you doing that might be of value for coaches, their organizations? You know, what are you doing in the world of sports?
JP, I've been working as a speaker. So I've talked a lot about the relationship from my father, because my father was a biggest mentor to me. Not only a father, he was a person that I called him my beautiful enemy. Those people that help, not only they celebrate the good moments with you, but they help you see the blind spots. They give you hard feedbacks that sometimes you hate when you listen to that. But once you work on that, you become much stronger. So I've been working about lessons learned from the sport, being an elite athlete, to life, to the organizational setting, to parenting as well, to being a better person. I also have been working with athletes, high-performance athletes, in this mentoring program that brings the science of happiness into high performance and also leadership programs at organizations. Lessons learned from sport, what we can use at the organizational setting.
All right, that's it for our conversation with Chris and Alyssa. If you are looking for a fully comprehensive book on sports parenting, and even, you know, coaches will find value in this book, be sure to check out Sport, A Stage for Life. Chris is an amazing human being, and we'll have links to her book and details for getting in touch with her. This episode is brought to you by the TOC One-on-One Coaching Program. We're dedicated to helping leaders and organizations build an extraordinary culture that puts people first. At TOC, we believe that coaches need coaches, and we're here to provide you with the practical guidance and support you need to succeed. Our program includes weekly one-on-one coaching calls with myself or Nate, who will serve as your trusted sounding board and help you navigate any challenges you may face. You'll also have access to our culture assessments and 360 feedback, which provide valuable insights into your leadership style, as well as personalized plans for creating a culture that reflects your values and goals. As a member of the TOC One-on-One Coaching Program, you'll also gain access to our thriving TOC community, where you can connect with other coaches from around the world, participate in book studies and roundtable discussions, as well as access a wealth of resources designed to help you build a winning culture. If you're ready to take your coaching to the next level and create an extraordinary culture for your team or organization, we'd love to hear from you. Visit tocculture.com/workwithus to learn more about the TOC One-on-One Coaching Program, or you can find more information at tocculture.com. Links to both of these sites will be included in the details of this episode. All right, that's it for today's episode of the Coaching Culture Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, we're grateful for people who take 15 to 30 seconds just to leave us a review. And I know your friends appreciate it when you send them an episode that they find valuable. So don't hesitate to share today's episode.